Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I have my co-host with me.
Well, good evening and welcome to a beautiful Tuesday, and one that we continue to move and work in this month of October. Dr. Val, I think you outdo yourself every week, and inside of all the things that you do, you never seem to ever lack this energy, this passion, and this compassion for the work that we do. And so I'm excited to get started today. I'm welcoming you back. You know, you're just getting back from travel. Yeah. And it's just amazing how you just keep it fresh no matter what.
Well, to God be the glory. God is always faithful to us, even when we're not as faithful to him.
Absolutely. And you know,
this is the last show for the month of October. Okay. That's Tuesday in October. This is the last show. And I'm so excited about our two guests. And, you know, we're both advocates of domestic violence, Dr. J, and you have your nonprofit. And I'd like you to share what your nonprofit does as it relates to domestic violence, because people don't realize that men are advocates as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Val, my nonprofit is Destiny by Choice, Inc. Destiny by Choice has been around since 1999 and everything. Yeah. It is, this whole thing is about empowering lives, shaping destinies of those impacted by domestic violence, fatherlessness, and other social determinants that affect our community. And what's so important about that is because so much of what we do is about advocacy, education, empowerment, and training, and specifically, you know, concentrating on the African diaspora and the communities of faith as far as engaging in their roles and what we like to say, equipping new allies in this whole plight in addressing domestic violence.
Absolutely. You know, you started your nonprofit for domestic violence before I did. And yeah, we've been friends for over 30 something years.
Yes, exactly.
And you had no idea that I myself was a victim of domestic violence. We worshiped together and, yeah, you know, we socialized together, and you had no idea that I was a victim of domestic violence.
Which lends itself to that whole notion that people don't understand, that you could be right by someone that may be a victim of domestic violence and you do not know. And consider the atmosphere where we're in, it becomes almost a perfect place to wear the mask, unfortunately, in the church.
In the church.
Wear that mask. We don't talk about it because for some reason the church has become a place where people feel like they can't be vulnerable. They can't be transparent. They can't fall apart. So we have to keep on the mask. And that's why I said long before this pandemic, we've been wearing masks long before. They wasn't mandated.
Long before.
Voluntary. And so, you know, but I thank God that, you know, you found the strength, you found the know-how, and you turned your pain into power. And from that, you know, you birthed the From the Soul of the Woman Foundation. And then not only that, it's out of, I mean, you turn your pain into power and purpose, and you start writing. You wrote books, and books that told your story, and then books for others. I mean, not only from your first book, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt, but even, you know, forgiving your past to free your future, you know, Unveiling Secrets of the Heart was the main title. Those books there spoke volumes because it allowed people to find that place of being transparent, to find safety in unveiling that. And I believe that in doing so, you help so many people because it doesn't feel good being a victim of anything. It doesn't feel good because when we hear the word victim, we associate it with being weak.
Exactly.
Not good enough, not complete, not whole. Who wants to be a part of the not club, right? And so it was books such as your books that you've written, and so many from there, you know, Restored Vessel. I mean, so many books that you have done have all spoken to the voices of those who oftentimes have been trapped, who didn't have the freedom to speak their truth. And so that's one of the things that have made our friendship an incredible journey. Because the fact I didn't know in those early years at all, but my God, once you came out, the world now knows the power of what God can do and the power of what you've done. You've turned pain into purpose and purpose into power. And you've done this and you've been consistent with it, and it continues to touch lives. So that's the type of thing that we hope to generate when we share these type platforms, these type stories. You're a living example that one can come through it and come out of it. And I try to be an example that, listen, as men, we ought to be concerned about this issue just as much as women. We ought to be concerned about how our boys conceptualize manhood. We ought to be concerned about how we may or may not walk inside of toxic masculinity. We ought to be concerned as men, whether we be men of faith or men of God or just men, period. We ought to have enough gumption and desire to be able to raise our daughters up in an environment where they see healthy men and healthy relationship. And that'll be our mandate. And that's exactly why I continue to do this work.
Well, I applaud you. And I thank you for standing up for so many men who've chosen to be silent regarding this situation. Because I'm sure there are men that have sisters that are abused, and yet they still say nothing because of the embarrassment of it all. But there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And that's one of the things that we as women go through when we're being battered, the embarrassment and humiliation of it all. And that's why I'm glad we have this special guest that'll be joining us tonight.
Absolutely. You know, I couldn't have found two better persons to be here tonight, because they are survivors. Number one, let's say they're survivors. They're strong women. They are women with purpose, and they're women who understand this pain of abuse and how to overcome it. And so our first guest, I've known her a few more years. We've been on a few platforms together. It's none other than Audrell Davis Jones. Now, we got to understand that Audrell, she is a survivor, but she was a fireball. She's an author. Matter of fact, her book became the backdrop of what would become her foundation. Her book was called Battle Scars of Emotions, Divine Healing from the Scars of Life. And that book tells the story of the abuse that she went through as a child, including domestic violence, sexual violence, and the things that really could have destroyed her life, could have totally changed the trajectory of it. But through the help of God and her strength and breaking silent, she turned her pain into power, into purpose, and she started this foundation. And she got this platform, even through this book, to tell that story so that people who've been suffering in silence understand that you don't have to be in prison to your embarrassment, in prison, because at the end of the day, it shouldn't be the victim slash survivor that ought to be embarrassed and shamed. It ought to be the perpetrator. It ought to be the abuser who's shamed and embarrassed for doing what they did. So I want to welcome today also the Reverend Audrell Davis Jones, because she is an ordained reverend as well. And we welcome you today to Hot Topics from the Soul.
I'm honored to have you, my queen. Blessings to you.
Thank you. And so is he with you.
Thank you so much for having the courage to raise up, to be a voice to nations and to people everywhere, not just women, not just young children, but people everywhere, because men are victims of domestic violence as well. And I'm so honored that you are here to tell and share your story.
I am so honored to be here, and thank you for the invite. I am just so delighted to tell my story, and there are so many facets of my story. I often say you're going to have to just guide me, because I got so much to tell. That is, of course, another book is on its way. However, I look at what I am now as to opposed to what I were years ago. This vulnerable, this timid, did not want to come out. Matter of fact, it wasn't until after my father died that I was feeling free to share my story, because he did not know. And I think that if he had known, it probably would have taken him out, because he felt that he always needed to protect me. Yes, as old as I am or was when he passed, I am a daddy's girl.
Me too.
Yes, indeed. So I really felt that by coming out with my story at the time that I did was really good for me. And it took me a long time to write this book. And one of the things that I often say about writing my book, it really was a task, a labor of love and a sheer task, simply because as I was writing, I was going through so many different emotions of reliving or retelling or just saying how much I kept silence. And all I remember for a lot of years is wearing this beautiful necklace that I had designed with Chinese writing, M-E. Now we have it, fast forward, the Me movement. But when people would ask me about the Me, because I did not know how to tell my story, I said, I am me. And then another follow-up question would be, what about you? And that is when, and that was how I introduced myself and start really trying to break this silence, because it had me so immobled. It really had me paralyzed in a lot of ways, and to the point that when I saw children, right away, I knew that they were victims. Mm-hmm. Right away, I knew, and I worked, and God had an awesome task for me, and that was for me to actually work around youth. And they confided in me to the point that I was able to just talk with them or talk with their parents or sympathize with them. So my story is really deep, and it goes a long ways. Early on of molestation and just different things that children should not even be centered around or be introduced to.
You know, it's unfortunate, but so many children have been sexually abused, and it has affected them in their adult life, and they don't know how to put a voice to it.
Exactly.
To express the pain that they had, because they buried it in their vault of secrets. So it's very hard for them to even communicate that something happened to them, and they don't understand what happened to them or why it happened to them, but they know it did happen. So what's the title of your book?
The title of my book is Battle Scars of Emotions, Divine Healing from the Scars of Life.
Wow.
And how I got to almost two topics is because my bishop at the time, when he read my book, because I wanted a man to read it. I wanted from a spiritual base, because matter of fact, that is all that I had at the time to hold on to keep me. That's what kept me. And I wanted him to read it. And he says, I don't agree with your topic. And he says, the reason that I do not agree with your topic is because I believe that it was God who divinely kept you and divinely helped you to get to the other side of where you are now as a strong survivor. And that is how, and I really appreciated what he had said and really looked at it and was just, yes, 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 it was God that kept me, and it was God that held me, and it was God that was able to teach me, because no one else would be able to do that. So I'm really excited about that. And it seemed like everything I do, I talk about the emotion part of it, because we have a tendency to shield it in such a way that it has just been something that even children now do not know how to express themselves.
You know, one of the things that you said that is so important, you know, which kind of prompted the title of tonight's show, Stolen Innocence.
Oh, yes.
We talk about how domestic and sexual violence and the stolen innocence. And one of the things that happened is that young people, especially, and sometimes even older, they don't have a language yet to be able to express what they just experienced. They don't have a language. They don't have the words, the phraseology. So to be able to have a conversation to say that I'm in trouble, I was violated.
Right.
You know, I was hurt. You know, I didn't feel right. It's not always there to be able to phrase like that, especially when it happens at the hand of an adult, and particularly a supposedly trusted adult.
Exactly.
It turns the whole psyche to this place here that once again, that sense of powerlessness, grips them. That sense of powerlessness, it's like fear. It's like having vice grips locking around their mind because I feel powerless. I know what just happened to me was wrong, but what do I do about it?
Exactly. And you know, one of the things that really, oh my goodness, just kind of helped me, I really wanted to pull away from the church because it was a minister within the church that would touch me. And it wasn't until one Sunday, my grandmother says, go, he wants to talk to you. And I said, no, he doesn't want to talk to me. He wants to put a quarter in my hand and he's touching my body. And she slapped me. She says, don't you ever say anything about that pastor. Don't you ever let that out. And so when I look at this, we look at the hush hush. We look at the don't tell. We look at this is how our family was. And then when I became pregnant, I was pregnant before I got married. And I explained to them, I said, he stole me. That is how I described what happened to me. And she says, no, you just gave yourself. You just, you know, so it was just always never actually looking at me or listening to what it was that I was saying. And that's where the date rape. Now, years later, I knew it was date rape. But at that time, all I could say is, hey, he stole me. And so
was it the pastor?
This was my husband at the time, the young. So the pastor touched me, but it was my ex-husband who I said stole me. And at this time, not knowing what to say or how to address it, I said, he stole me. I was asleep. I was sick. I says, and when I knew anything, you know, he was there. She says, no, you wanted it and all of that. And but one thing you're going to do is marry him. You're not going to bring shame to my family. You are going to marry him. And I felt so bad. So being the creative person that I am, I made my beautiful dress. I wanted it to be white because, you know, we do not tell our young girls about this white picket fence that we have set up in our head, right, that everything, we're going to get married and stay married forever and a day. And he's our knight in shiny armor in spite or despite of the situation that created this marriage. Well, when my grandmother saw that my dress was white, she says, I'm not inviting none of my friends to your wedding. Wow. None of my friends will come to your wedding because you are pregnant and you're in a white dress. And still, I'm 16 years old. And so now, but I tell you what, I vowed that it would never happen to my daughter, and it didn't. I vowed that every boyfriend that she knew how special she was, and he was going to treat her just like that. And I vowed that she would never settle for anything less. And of course, when she went away to college, yes, I interfered when I saw that it was somebody attaching himself to her.
When my granddaughter's in college, I'm all in there.
Yes. And I tell parents, I says, get in there. Oh, he needs privacy. No, not until he starts paying his own rent. He doesn't need no privacy. No, she doesn't need no privacy. No locked doors here. So I really do, because of what I went through, I really vow to be there for my daughter and to protect her in every way that wasn't offered and protected to me. And then the other thing I always say, when your child tells you somebody is doing something to them or they are uncomfortable, believe them and investigate it.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate though that, you know, more so back in the day than now, because people are more vocal about what's happening to them physically. Yes. But it's so unfortunate that back in the day, everything was said, well, go on in the house, stay in the house. And they would sweep things under the rug, especially based on the position of that oppressor or abuser.
Correct.
They would want not to be tarnished. And then it made us as women feel so low, so insignificant, and it stripped us of our dignity and self-respect.
Exactly. And one of the things that I find myself sharing and telling young women, as well as anyone who listened to me, when God brings you out of something or a situation, it is no longer just your business. It is the business of who you're trying to help, because you are not to continue to be silent or to sit on it in that way. And I want to just say that the topic, I just was so impressed with the topic, and I did not pull this poem out, but I wrote a poem, Spoiled Before Rotten. It's my Maya Angelou poem, and it really talks about how I was stolen, and it almost tells the story of this youth. So I don't have it to memory, but I really wish I had pulled it so that I would be able to share that, because that poem in itself, Spoiled Before Rotten, really talks about the essence, the pain, the scariness of domestic abuse and how men lurk in these places. And we're talking about family members as well. Because one of my abusers was a family member. And that is one of the things that I said that I could never tell my dad.
Right. We see that happening. And that's one of those areas where we like to call the salad. You know, that code unfortunately, we have seen generations of incest happen within our families.
And correct.
And generally, no one calls it out. Correct. No one calls it out because they think about how it will destroy the family.
Exactly. Yet still,
they don't think about the impact that it has on the victim themselves. And exactly. As a result of it, you know, you start wondering about Uncle Charlie, mm-hmm. you know, my cousin and those type things, because of fact, if you don't have boundaries.
That's right.
To protect the family members, then how can they expect protection outside of the family? Exactly. Relationship. And so that is a major situation there, which once again, suppressing. That's a form of emotional torture, because now you're suppressing. It's a deep secret that you've carried around. You've heard about it, but you've got to, however many times you face that family member, whether it's at a cookout or family reunion or whatever, you've got to look over there at that person who you know that was inappropriate with you, who might have violated you. And go on, ask if nothing happened, because generally when the victim, and I listened to you when you're talking about your grandmother, where she basically said, you will not shame, you know, her. And basically, you know, you were ordered that you were going to get married. And so you married someone, I'm going to say not out of love, but out of threat, out of obligation, mm-hmm. you're going to
out
do
of
so.
Obligations, yes. And one of the things, as far as that family member is concerned, you are so right as far as family gatherings or whatever that took place. But one of the main things that when that family member died, I found myself being relieved instead of sorrow.
Yes.
And so I again had to go back, and this is where that battle scars of emotions is. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and just really ask God, am I being selfish? Forgive me for what I'm feeling. You know, because this was something that I tell my daughter when she came around, and because of him, I said, don't hug. Don't get close. This is how you're going to hug. She hugged with her elbows up in between her and them. And to this day, she still do not embrace people to just really bring them to her because of that. And I was just like a lioness, you know, as it relates to how my daughter, because I was angry that my mother did not protect me. And I felt that there were things that my mother sometimes, and I love my mother, I love my father, but there are some times that I felt as a child, as a child, they should have been aware of, and I didn't have to say anything. And so I made sure that with my daughter, I was going to be all up in her business, all everywhere. And even when I divorced, I always says, did he make you uncomfortable if I brought someone around? And I was very careful of doing that as well, simply because I did not want a stranger to do anything to my daughter, or that I would regret. And so with it, people do not realize the domestic violence and the abuse of all the depth of it. And this is what I'm saying, that I am a bookend between so many different chapters and so many different areas. But one of the things that I am so excited about is that I got my voice back. And who can keep me quiet now? I'm telling you, you know, even on my Facebook page, I'm doing all kind of inspirations for the 31 days of domestic violence. And some of the things I go long and deep. And yes, some of it, you know, some of it I said, okay, well, let me just give them something a little short today. But I truly feel that it's so important that we get our voice back, and then we have a community who does not try to, at one point when I first came out, try to quiet me and says, who want to hear this in the church? And a lot of ministers would not invite me to speak at their church because of some of the things that I was saying. Yes, it's true. Yes, it's true. And I didn't have a problem in using some of my examples because I know that I was not alone. And I know that it touched some other families or some other young girl that's right out there need to hear it.
Yeah, Les Brown is actually the one that got me to tell my story, because I didn't think it was appropriate. And I didn't think what I had to say had any value to bring any healing or deliverance to anyone. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I say that a lot of children are victims of sexual abuse, it is so much more than we even could fathom. And, you know, because I was a victim of sexual abuse as a child as well. And living through that and holding that into my vault of emotions, my secrets. Yes. And when I got married, before I got married my first time, I shared it with my husband. And later on into that marriage, he used it against me. And every time we get into a disagreement, he would bring it up and throw it in my face and this and that. And, you know, humiliate me even the more so. Exactly. And then when I met, like I said, Les Brown, he told me to speak it out. So I got my voice back. I got my power back. And then I'm married now to an amazing individual. And again, I shared my story and I told them about who I am, because of the fact that if you can't be naked to that one that's supposed to love you and take care of you, then what's the point in being with them?
Exactly.
So being in a safe place is so very important emotionally and mentally to get to the next level. And I'm so glad that, you know, you were able to speak out. And how can individuals connect with you after this show? Give your website, and if you have an email address where individuals can email you, because they may want to, you know, communicate with you further regarding this.
Yes. Well, my email address is awjones524@aol.com. My website is, I have two. One is www.audrielchantel.com, and my other one is battlescarsministries.org. And I am just so elated and that I have this opportunity, and we're also in the process of launching, so that with our thrift store that we will be able to help victims as well as survivors as a resource center. So I'm just excited as to what's to come, and I cannot wait to meet you personally, and I cannot wait to get an opportunity to have one of the big events that I am in the process of doing. As a playwright, I want to put that play out there, The Battered, The Broken, and The Bruised.
Wow.
Because I tell you, we go through so much. And those are three chapters within my book itself, The Battered, The Broken, and The Bruised.
Awesome. So Audrea, I want you to remain in studio because we have another guest, and I want you to join us as we get closer to the end of the show. So please remain in studio for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow. You know, these are the type of stories that is needed during this time, that people can understand that when we talk about stolen innocence, we're talking about being violated as young. So domestic violence doesn't necessarily wait till a person turns, 18 or 21. As a matter of fact, we know that the highest number of instances of domestic violence happen to young ladies between the ages of 15 to 29 years old. And so we talk about a very important part of their lives. And so it is with our guest, our next guest that's coming up, Natasha Alcindor. Natasha, she is a life coach. She's a mentor. She's a public speaker. She's the CEO and founder of Pain with No Scars, Inc., an organization that she created in a platform and a safe space for women that had experienced trauma and abuse. Her incredible story is amazing. This incredible young lady, once again, is a life coach. She's a mentor. She's a motivational speaker. But she's no stranger to adversity. She's no stranger to having her innocence stolen at a very early age. What could have broken her? What could have destroyed her? What could have taken her out has only been part of the thing that has birthed purpose inside of her, including a yearly conference that she deals with pain with no scars, the things that she's doing to bring healing and deliverance inside of it. So her platform is actually, it's a culmination of both spiritual, clinical, social, but it's all about holistic deliverance from what she's gone through.
Well, and I'm excited to hear from Natasha and see what all she has to say.
So Natasha, welcome to Hot Topic from the Soul.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here on tonight. Thank you for having me. Thank you for even considering me, because, you know, sometimes you would want to know who would want to listen to me or who would want to hear my story. My story is one like no other. But I can honestly tell you right now, I'm at the place in my life where I thank God for everything that I've been through that brings me to the person that I am today. Even though a lot of things came from when I was a little girl, because you don't know better as a child, especially if you was raised in a house, what happens in the house stays in the house. So you didn't have a voice. It's like we have to keep everything within.
Natasha, stay focused in the mic so we can hear you. You're going in and out.
Okay. So what about now?
Yes, if you can stay on that position. Thank you.
Okay. So we had to, everything that happened in our house, we had to keep it in our house. So we couldn't tell anybody. So it was like, Mom, I'm being molested. You're lucky. It was one of those things where I was young. From a little girl, I was born in Nassau, Bahamas, and I was raised in Freeport. Things started to happen. But at a young age, you didn't know if it was abuse or what it was, because this of course, this is my mother. So if I would always want the best from my mother, because this is my mother, but my mother never wanted me at a young age. And I always figured out, why did this lady don't want me? Then she met that perfect guy, and I guess perfect to her. And he did not want me around his kids. So my mom always had to push me off to somebody else. So as she pushed me off to somebody else, now you're around other people. I was being molested at a young age from 5 years old. And then these are people that's supposed to love me and protect me. So I would say something to my mom every time I would see her, but she would say, why are you saying that? Why are you saying that? You're lying. Why are you saying that? So I was being called a liar from a young age. So I remember at 7 years old coming here to the United States. And then from there, it just got worse. My mom wasn't here, so living with family and, you know, being a kid. So now family started to take advantage of me. And now I actually can talk about this thing because my mom passed away in 2018. I never had the courage because I was so afraid of her to talk about it. So actually, when my mom died in 2018, that's when I was able to have a voice to talk about it. So at a young age, family member you know, I considered at a young age, I was a sex slave, and that's not the right name I would want to give, but that's what it was. So you have to come home from school and automatically get in position. Like,
Jesus.
At a time, you don't even have a cycle, but you were a sex slave. So, and every time I would communicate with mom would say, "You're lying, and you're such a liar." And so I was tired of hearing that I'm such a liar. So it went on for years, and I never said nothing. It went on for years, and I never said nothing until I started picking up in 2011, when I actually came. My mom was here and was living with my mom. So now it starts coming down to my stepfather. He was like, "Oh, yeah, you know, this is a good opportunity." So when he started to touch me, I told my mother, nothing happened. And she was like, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to need you to stop accusing him because he's paying my bills. So you're lying, and that's all it's going to be." So he continued. I would tell her all the time, you know, I got school involved. And, you know, the school started to come to the house, and police started to come to her house. And then it was from there my life was hell. So it was still that I was lying. So he continued to have sex with me throughout the years up until I was 15. And this is one of the things that I'm saying, that everything happens for a reason. And I think God allowed everything to happen for a reason. The first time I actually had sex on my own, I got pregnant with my daughter at 15.
I didn't hear you. You were going in and out.
Okay. At the age of 15, I said, when I was able to have sex on my own, I actually started that first time I was pregnant with my daughter. And from there, the health department came and told my mother that I'm pregnant. And she told me, "Well, two adults don't live in a house. You got to go." So I was in the street homeless at 15. I was living behind one Dixie Girl. I still had the courage to just get up and act like everything was okay while I was pregnant with my daughter. And sometime when I would need food, I would go and ask people, "Can you give me some food, or let me sleep here and spend the night?" Because I didn't want to sleep behind this store every night on my own. So she would never let me back home. And even though other people that knew the story would go and talk to her, would say, "No, I'm not letting her back in my house because she's going to make me lose the man that is paying my bills. I'm not going to let her back in the house." So I just said, "You know what, I'm just going to do this. However it works out, it works out." And now when things happen to you as a child, so now that I have daughters, what happened is I treated my daughters so bad that it's ridiculous that they don't want to leave home. I didn't want these things to happen to them. So of course,
Natasha, try to adjust your volume on your computer.
Okay.
Because I'm getting a lot of feedback bouncing back, and it's getting difficult to hear you.
Okay. What about me?
Lower your volume a little bit. Maybe that'll stop with some of the feedback.
Okay. What about me?
Okay. So share your story.
Yeah. So with that being said, now, the fact that you were raised in a home with certain things going on at home, which, you know, I was always called the liar. So I started to keep quiet. When things would happen, I started to keep quiet. And just to go into another abusive relationship with my children's father, I didn't realize the abuse because I was so accustomed to being
to it.
Yeah. So it was an abuse where I couldn't go outside. It was just I couldn't go to work and come home. I couldn't have no friends. I was getting beat up, and it was a lot. So I didn't realize it was abuse until 1999. This was a person that I was with, a complete narcissist. And you know, narcissists is good at what they do. So you start to believe it.
Believe it, yes.
And one day I decided to leave. And again, I was homeless with two kids. You know, homeless with two kids, and I slept at a park in the car with my children for a year until I was able to get on my feet. And, you know, with being molested by numerous people, so now I didn't trust anybody. Even though somebody may have meant well for me, I didn't trust anybody. So I decided to just stay on the streets, but I was angry and bitter. And it was, you know, I didn't trust anybody. So now the fact that all of these things took place, and it's more than that, it's just we don't have enough time in the day for me to tell what else I've been through. So with me going through all of that, and I had to raise two kids. So now what I did is I had to bury everything that went on in my life, like they never happened. So I would just say, that never happened to me, and maybe I'm crazy. And growing up in an islander household, nothing's wrong with you. You know, they don't believe in mental issue. That's one thing we don't believe in. So depressed, they never believe that you're depressed. It's just, oh yeah, you just don't want to get
it's your not just an island thing, just so you know, a lot of people won't accept that mental illness exists. Right.
Yeah, so they never, you know, it's never believed, but I went on through numerous of stuff. I, due to the fact that I was molested so much by my stepfather, I had a bladder issue. And my mother always used to say, why do you pee in bed? Why is all of this? Well, I had a bladder issue because he was having sex with me so much that I couldn't hold my pee anymore. You know, I couldn't hold my pee anymore. And it was just that my mother was, she didn't understand that she was mentally abusing me.
Yeah,
it was, my mother was never there. Yeah, and it was just sad to see a mother treat her child like that. So a lot of the things that I went through, it's because of my mother, and I ended up getting into another relationship because sometimes things that you're accustomed to, that's what you go back to. So I ended up getting in another relationship. It was a 16-year relationship, another narcissist. He didn't physically put his hands on me, but he mentally and emotionally did things that didn't make sense. But I said, I'll stick around because, you know, I don't want to move on. I was, you know, had a lot of things going on with being molested and things were happening. So I said, you know, let me just make that my comfort zone. Until one day God started, I was praying and was in a fast and God said, Natasha, look, this is too much. This is too much. And I found my way out. I found my way out and I got my voice back. When my mother passed away, and even before she passed away, I remember she was in hospice and I had a conversation with her. I'm like, Mom, why did you let me go through so much? And she told me she didn't know. And she said to me, I hated you so much out of all of my children. She said, I hated you. I said, and she said, you are the one who stuck by me from 2005 until 2018 until I passed away. I'm about to pass away. And I stood by my mom, even though she would push me away, don't come to her house, and things that she would do to me, even while I was pregnant with her grandkids. You know, she almost let me die with my second child. And I remember, mind you, I don't have a place to stay. I'm homeless. And I said, Mom, I walked around and said, can you please give me something to eat? And her exact words to me were, if it's up to me, you're going to die with that child. She did not feed me. But that night I ended up in the hospital because now I had no food. So it was like I was throwing up this green mucus and I passed out in the ambulance. Somebody see me on the floor at the bus stop and the ambulance picked me up and I was in the hospital. So I don't regret anything that I've been through. I just want to tell people. I think if it wasn't because of what I went through, the testimony that I have, I wouldn't have had it. It's a lot more that I went through, and that's why I don't take anything lightly. And my heart goes out to people more because I can relate to people more because I allow God to, God, why? I just wanted to know why. And God had to show me and explain certain things to me. My mother did exactly what her mother did to her.
Oh, she didn't have a voice. She went through the same thing as well. So yeah. Therefore, she blacked out when you would tell her about your sexual abuse because she had been sexually abused.
Right.
She in turn blocked it out and you were a reminder of what she went through.
Yes, and she didn't want to get it. And that's why, you know, even with pain, with no scars, it's something that I prayed about and I had to go to God. And, you know, I went to him numerous times in reference to pain with no scars. God gave me that need. I always used to say I go through so much and somebody may see me. They'd be like, oh, yeah, Natasha, she's a beautiful young lady. But nobody don't know. So I had all of this pain build up, but I didn't have any scars to prove anything. So I had to do that. And now, you know, that God is calling me to this full time. full-time working. I have a lot of people, a lot of mentors, a lot of, you know, people that I have to coach that come to me on a regular basis. And with holding a 9-to-5, I'm not able to do it because I don't have the time. So I do as little as I can. But I want to tell people that there is life beyond pain. You don't have to stay there.
Yes.
You don't have to stay there. And my mission with Pain with No Scars is to let people know that you can tell your story. It's not a secret. You can tell somebody. I was told not to tell nobody. I was told that, well, if people know that your stepfather slept with you, you won't be any good to any men. That's what I was told.
Right.
Because that's what my mother believed. So now that I have a voice that I can talk, you know, even sometimes people say, you tell us so much, like, how can you still stand? Because this is the will of God. That's why I'm still standing. It was not my time. It was many of times that I was homeless and people had molested me while I was pregnant with my daughters. But it was like, okay, God, I don't have no place to sleep if I'm sleeping behind a grocery store. So what am I think that's supposed to happen to me? So these things happened to me and it made me who I am. I don't regret anything, but I just thank God that I can tell somebody else what I've been through to make them get their life, you know, back on track. So Pain with No Scars is a platform. I want everybody to tell this story. Tell somebody because somebody can help you with what you're going through.
Always tell, because the more you tell, the more real it becomes to you, and you'll be able to get the help that you need. So right. I'm so glad that you didn't silence yourself and fold into a shell, which so many people do because they don't know how to communicate what happened. They don't know how to communicate their pain. So I'm glad that you were able to come out of that. Now, one of the questions I want to ask is, what was it that caused a shift in you to rise up to be the woman that you are now?
The shift in me is that I had something that needed to be heard. I had something that God's people need. So since my mother that carried me for 9 months did not understand, so I left her alone. I forgave her. I left her alone and I went to God. So, and I asked God, I told God, do you think I'm ready to talk about it? And I prayed and I fasted on it. And that's why I'm here today. But it needed to be heard for somebody else. And my testimony alone is not for me. It's for somebody else.
You know, first of all, Natasha, let me say this. Your courage, what you've gone through. If I could apologize for every person who molested you, who violated you, I would. I want to speak to you from this place. You know, when I met you a few months ago and you just shared a little bit of your story, out of everyone in that room who shared stories, something about your story, it grabbed me. Because at the end of your story was such a strong voice of deliverance. And one of the things that you focused on so much was forgiveness. I mean, there you were up there telling people to forgive. And if you forgive, you free yourself.
Right.
When we look at you now, I mean, you're a beautiful woman. You have beautiful daughters. Your platform is absolutely amazing because you didn't stop by just thinking about yourself. Literally, Pain with No Scars is a platform for people who have been traumatized and abused to be able to have a voice and find strength and find that place there. Now, you've done all of these things and you continue to do those things there.
Yes.
Out of it. And I know that you've heard every negative message. You'll never find a man. What man's going to value you?
Right.
I heard that.
About you. And, you know, and all those things. How have you been able to keep your head up? And I mean, let me just ask, has that affected you going forward inside a relationship? Have you had anyone hear your story and say, oh, no, thank you? Or did you have just opposite effect? I mean, some men, not very many of us, they can hear the story of the brokenness of a person and understand the only reason this person is here is by the grace of God.
Right. By the grace of It's by the grace of God that, you know, I'm here today. And I always, when I pray, then I think, God, listen, if somebody cannot come into my life that's going to understand the things that I've been through and where I need to go, or I think they can judge me in the process, don't send them. I want somebody that's going to understand me and that's going to fill in the gap for the things that I've been through. I'm over it. But you have to show me that you can fill in that gap. You're not going to come and criticize me. I didn't have control of everything that took place in my life. I have control of my life now, when after my mother passed away, because I was still afraid of my mother at 38 years old. I was still afraid to talk at 38 years old. So I need somebody that's going to understand me and that's going to walk on this journey with me to know that I didn't have a voice and I just got my voice back. So you don't even have to work with me because I'm healed. I had to go back and heal that little girl named Natasha because that little girl was still broken inside. So I went back and I took a whole month to heal that little girl. And in the process of healing that little girl, I had to forgive everybody. Wow. I had to forgive everybody, whether or not how I felt, it doesn't matter. I had to forgive that person because I couldn't move on without forgiving those people. And that's why I have a book called Forgiveness is Key, Let It Go. I had to do that. Those were part of my healing process. And then the prayer journal that I created, those are scriptures that I used in my healing process. So I had to do it for me. And if somebody comes in, if you're going to love me, you're going to have to love me for me to understand that those things, those are my past. I didn't have control over it, but I have control of what's to come.
Uh-huh. You know, there's so many broken women. And, I thank you for your story and people that are listening. Support Natasha by going to her website, www.painwithnoscars.com, because I believe that there isn't a woman alive that doesn't have a scar. Rather is domestic violence, rather is mental abuse, sexual abuse, bullying. You've had a trauma. You know, people don't associate domestic violence and bullying, but it's in the same family. Because you're still overpowering, but they don't associate that as being domestic violence and bullying.
Right.
So I don't think that there's a person alive that hasn't gone through some type of emotional trauma that has scarred them. And then, so, you know, people see me and I like loving on people. And I do that because I know where I've been. I know the hurt and pain I came from. And you talk about forgiveness. And, you know, you got to forgive where you've been in order to free where you have to go. You have to, otherwise you will be in cage and not allowed to be able to function as a mother for your children. Now, how old are your daughters?
25 and 23. Awesome. And I remember with my mother, she said that, oh, your kids are not going to be no good. They're going to get pregnant at 15. They're going to do all the bad things that you did. But I wasn't a bad kid. You just never understand me. That's why it seems like I was a bad kid. But my daughter is 25, never been pregnant. Because I said I was going to break that generational curse because it wasn't going to go on. With my children, and my other daughter is 23. No children, never been pregnant.
Amen.
So sometimes we have to speak life over our situation. And that's what I did. And spoke life over my situation. And now, like I say, my life is an open book and I'm willing to talk about it all over the world. It's no secret.
Mm-hmm.
No secret.
I encourage parents, you know, when you have a child, listen to what they're saying and pay attention to what they're not saying. Because things happen and they're so traumatized till they feel, now with me, I was afraid if I told my dad, he would kill the person, even though my mind couldn't calculate what would happen. I just knew that my dad was gangster and no telling what would happen. But I didn't think that, you know, to blame myself for it. I was just afraid for what might happen. And a lot of times we carry that weight and that guilt and responsibilities on our backs that we weren't meant to carry. And we weren't supposed to carry, and no one asked us to carry it, but we carry that. And again, I talk about the emotion. Women are emotional creatures, and we hold so much inside. So, you know, I want to make sure that parents, men, women, when you have children, pay attention to them, participate in their lives, check on them in school, check on them with their relationships with even family members, because it was a family member, as you said. You know, they'll be right there, you know, that little cousins that want you to come over all the time. When my kids, I have four kids, so when they came home, I'd be like, how was your day? How did everything go? And I always told them, y'all stick together. Y'all watch out from one another. Do not separate. And if somebody separates from the other, I want to know why you separated. Why did you take your eyes off your sister? Why did you take your eyes off your brother? You always supposed to stay in a pack. So that's the only way that I was able to function and go through, because I always worried about them. And, you know, so therefore I participated, stayed close to them. When they would come home from school, I look at them. And forgive me, but I was that parent when my kids would get in a fight or run home and say somebody was, but I was that parent that was going up there to fight. I was going up there to get them straight, and I didn't care if their mother or father came. I'd be like, who's your parents? And I would go knock on their door, because, you know, it starts at home. It starts at home. We have to participate. You know, we have to look out for one another's children. If you see something, say something. I don't think that, oh, if I say something and get them taken away or something, I'd rather that child be safe checking on them than have to worry about seeing that the fact that they had been molested or they'd been killed by the abuser.
Yes, and you know, with that being said, I wouldn't wish domestic violence abuse on even my enemy. It's not a good feeling. It's
have
not
no idea.
Yes, because I put it behind my mind, and I started to believe that it did not happen to me. That's what I was telling myself. It did not happen to me. It did not happen to me until in 2019, actually, my stepfather, he came and got on his knees and asked me to forgive him. But little did he know, I forgave you already, because I was trying to move. I needed healing for me. I forgave you. And I said, it's okay. Now, I can see the person and say, are you okay? How are you doing today? Because I forgave them. If they didn't forgive themselves, that's on them. But I forgave everybody that had wronged me. So, I mean, sometimes people need to pay attention. Just pay attention.
Just pay attention.
I don't want nobody looking at my daughter. Like, I would ask him, do you feel uncomfortable? Did he do something to you? How do he look at you? You know, I try to be really involved, because, like I said, I wouldn't like that to happen to anybody.
You know, ladies, you know,
I'm going to bring in Audrey L. back in, because we're almost out of time, but I want to bring her back in, because, you know, the stories were so powerful. I know we're going to go a little over, but it's okay. Yeah. If we can bring healing, we can bring deliverance to help individuals get free. Yes. That's what this show is meant to do. We are the pipeline to the community.
You know, one of the things that was said, and it's interesting with both of you, one of the key parts of your deliverance that broke your silence was when significant people in your life died.
Yes.
And that was a commonality. You know, there's a scripture said, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. You know, and for you, you think about it, it took someone to die to almost free or give you that permission to go forward. But I want to go back to something that both of you said that you had in common, was being not believed, not believed. And I want our audience to hear this. You know, a few years ago, the National Sexual Assault Conference came up with the slogan, start by believing.
Exactly.
Start by believing. If you want to help someone, start by believing. Assume that they're right rather than to assume that they're wrong.
Exactly.
So oftentimes the common trait inside of sexual abuse and sexual violence is the fact that the victim is not believed oftentimes by their mothers. You know, in the when T.D. Jakes did the whole story a few years ago, and he made it into a movie and everything like that, Woman Thou Art News, it told the story of a young girl who was molested by her mom's boyfriend when she was young, but mom didn't believe it. Or we look and we go, well, your little fast self, that's just right. You. Yeah. And we put the blame on the victim. But I am going to say something to our men. I want to say something to our men. First of all, let me say something, that you don't violate these girls or these women.
Or the little boys. The little boys
even this day. To destroy innocence is the next thing to abomination.
Exactly.
You're destroying the innocence of life. You change the trajectory of a person's life inside of it.
Right.
And fathers, I need you to be more alert about things around you.
That's right. Your
boys, but definitely ask your girls, are you all right?
That's right.
Are you comfortable? Did that make you feel uncomfortable? Because it's important, even as a man, I don't want to be in the presence of a woman and do anything to make her feel uncomfortable. I mean, you see sometimes men undress people with their eyes and think, that's not good.
That's not.
So I say this to you, that inside of getting your power back and getting your voice back, all of you, both of you did your own path of healing. And I'm really emotional here. And it's hard for me in this moment. That's not very often that I find myself here. But people don't understand that journey in grabbing your power back.
That's right.
Finding your voice. You know, trying to find your identity again. Fighting every one of those things that's been said to you. You'll never be this and you'll never be that. And nobody will ever want you. And then your sense of value is trying to be defined by your experience.
Exactly.
And it takes God to come out of this thing. And the path to forgiveness, the path to healing, it's actually through forgiveness, and people don't understand the forgiveness wasn't for them, it's for you.
Exactly.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And I just say, you know, that even in this hour, this time that we're in, if you have a loved one, a family, a friend who's coming to you and saying that they're being violated or touched, believe them. Believe them. Start by believing them. You can't get help until you first start hearing them. And to the person who thinks that confronting the abuser, the offender, is going to upset your apple cart and upset your lifestyle and your family, I need you to understand that you're being selfish. You're looking at the moment.
Right.
But you're not looking at the picture. You're forfeiting the ultimate for the immediate.
Exactly.
We got to do better. There are hotlines out there. Their hotlines, if you want to just call 1-800-799-7233, that's SAFE, National Domestic Violence Hotline. The Sexual Violence Hotline, they're there. No one should have to grow up with that type of fear, that type of pain, that type of regret, that type of hurt, struggling with their self-esteem because of what has happened to them.
Exactly.
And that's why I tell men that when you get involved with women, you know, you can't come in, you know, with jumping on what they're not and abusing them with your mouth and telling them what they aren't. Some people you need to speak life back to. You're larger and you're bigger than what happened to you. You're more valuable than any experience that you've gone through. So I just want to say to every man out there, especially that's listening, it's time for us to man up. It's time for us to stand up and do our part.
Thank you so much, Dr. J. Audrielle, do you have any closing remarks for the audience, please?
One of the things that I just would like to say wholeheartedly is to speak up, get your voice back, tell someone. This is what I have been reaching out telling. And I often say that my story is your story, your story is my story, and we have nothing to be ashamed of because it was not something that a child would know. It was the child innocence that was taken from her or him. in that regard. And one of the things, in order to become who you truly are, I always say, to thyself be true. Speak true to yourself. Speak encouraging to yourself. My grandmother on her deathbed pointed her fingers at me and said, and you're going to get yours. And for a long time, it took me a while until one day sitting in that mirror, the Holy Spirit really helped me to see. And that light came in like no other. And I was able to say, yes, Grandma, I'm going to get mine, but it's not in the way that you intended. So when God has something and he brings you out of something, it is not just yours to keep to yourself. Or so many people look at me and say, how can you speak on this? Or I feel that women are weak who have done this. I know that I was a fighter way back when, and I'm a fighter now. And I just continue to speak up to break that silence and the cycle of domestic abuse. And one of the things that we could ever do to help anyone else in this lifespan is to let them know that domestic violence is not okay. It is no excuse, and it's nothing. And what I told my daughter, her friends, all the raising that I did not do, she's not going to get it. Send her home. You can't change anyone. And that is one of the things that I really want others to see at the importance of it, because they never know that this may happen to their daughter, to their son, to their loved one, someone that they love, and they wouldn't know how to handle it, or they would wish that they was as strong as the two of us. Thank you.
I appreciate you, Reverend Audrielle. Thank you. And we look forward to having you back again on the show to empower and inspire many people's lives. Natasha, you have any closing remarks?
Yes. Just to say to everybody that's listening is, tell somebody. Don't keep quiet. Tell somebody. Don't be like the little girl I was, and I put it behind my mind. It never happened. It did happen. Your voice needs to be heard. Someone may not believe you. Move on to the next. I just stuck to my mother because I felt that was my mother, and she was the safest thing. But tell somebody. Your voice needs to be heard. It's okay. Whatever they think about you, it's okay. But understand, that's your story to tell. Nobody else's. So tell somebody. It's not a secret. It doesn't matter what they have to say, no matter what they're going to call you, or big mouth liar, or who, whatever they're going to call you, tell somebody. Okay, you just tell somebody. It's always that person there willing to hear what you're going through and willing to help you. And I have a heart for helping others that went through domestic violence, whatever abuse it is. I have that heart that I want to help you. There is a way out. You don't have to stay there. It does not have to continue. Just tell somebody.
Amen. Thank you so much. We're at the end of the show. We could go on for another hour or two because there's so much. We have so much information to share and so many breakthroughs that are needed in the audience. Yes. But love affects our past, our present, our future. Love is an emotion, a gift given to us from God, and it should never, ever hurt. Tune in again next Tuesday for another Hot Topics from the Soul. And if this show has been a blessing, pass it on, share it to empower and inspire someone else's life. Good night. Amen. And God bless.
Good night.